if people basically entering to these PPA contracts, they would need then a software to manage. And of course, to enter these contracts, you need prices. So it's basically all one go-to-market move, only to realize over time that actually like, factually it's like three different go-to-markets at least.
Welcome to the Swisspreneur Show, a podcast about startup stories and learnings from experienced entrepreneurs. Here's your host, Sylvan.
Michael, a very well welcome to the Swisspreneur Show. It's a pleasure to have you as a guest today.
Thank you very much, Sylvan. Great to have me here at your show. Looking forward.
Same here. You're the co-founder and CEO at Pexapark, a provider of energy risk and portfolio management capabilities for renewable energy. And before we talk about your company and how you successfully scaled it up, I want to go back in time and start with your personal background. You got your master's in industrial management and manufacturing engineering from ETH here in Zurich, and then you went on to work for McKinsey. But then in 2008, that was not only the time of the financial crisis, there was also a shift happening towards renewables. What changed in the market?
Well, I think it's like a gradual change. So after McKinsey, so I started to work at an energy trading company. At that time, EGL became Expo Trading. I think that was 2003, so already quite a long time ago. And so I think like renewable energy, when I started, I think wind turbines, solar panels had been perceived as it requires more energy to produce that equipment than it will ever generate. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a bit left aside. And I think then was just gradual change. I think political shift to say, hey, energy independence from fossil fuels, neighboring states. I think still a very, very topical aspect today, as we all know. And then also like climate awareness. I think that really raised kind of like policies, support from governments to really kind of advance technology. And I think then at the time, I think that a lot of support schemes came up. And so renewable energy really became like investable. And also a lot of money had been allocated to invest into renewable energy infrastructure. And then so being on the energy trading side, so it just became a very interesting topic.
You sort of saw the timing, you know, building up and the wave building up that was coming there, right?
Yeah, it's like this, maybe the like the frog in the cold or hot water. So kind of if you put a frog in the hot water, I think it jumps out. Yeah. If not, then basically it just remains there, get boiled. So I think it basically was a bit of a mix, right? So it's kind of obviously you see kind of things coming. But then you had like the old world where you say, okay, renewables, I'm not sure whether that will ever work on the integrations. And then I think the company I work for like was very innovative and I think a lot of spirit to drive new things ahead. And so we just did see, I think, good opportunities to basically provide services for renewable energy and just had been lucky to be at the forefront of providing then risk management services for renewable energy.
And you spent 14 years at the previous company, but then it became Expo Trading. That is a long time. So I wonder what sort of inspired you from your work there at Expo Trading to then eventually start your own company?
Yeah, I think it was just an amazing place. So before it was like EGL I think it was just a very entrepreneurial culture. Yeah. So I think the market was just growing, a lot of new opportunities, but then also like the business culture. So supporting, they just came like, hey, Sylvan, you're a great guy, just go after it. Yeah. And I think it was just a fantastic team spirit. Mm-hmm. And also, like, we also did very, very interesting things in the market, also successfully. Obviously, that also helps, I guess, to drive things forward. But in general, it was just like if you had good ideas, you were encouraged to implement them. And I think it was quite easy to advance, I think, on that time.
But at the same time, that also sounds to me like an environment you don't easily just leave to start your own company. So was that also sort of a challenge to let go of Expo Trading and leave the company?
Of course, like after 14 years, I think it's part of like, it's like family.
Of course.
I think many obviously great memories on that time. But I think 14 years is also a long time. And I think we also actually moved to the, we moved the location, I think, from Expo Training to a neighboring canton. And I think, yeah, at that time it was just like the company just became bigger. Mm-hmm. And eventually, like, just, I think we just had the, yeah, the willingness and I think, yeah, just the drive to build new things, yeah, which eventually like became a bit more challenging at that time.
So the renewable wave that was building up at the time they got right, and it was also time for a little change eventually.
No, exactly. Like, it's absolutely. Yeah. It was an amazing time. And then, yeah, just I worked together with Luca, co-founder.
Yeah.
So we worked together like for 10 years, and we always had like these... just ideas, coffee chats,
yeah,
about like, kind of, hey, let's build own business, or could we do something different, mm-hmm, like a digital business. And so kind of like out of these coffee talks became then the idea of let's build Pexapark. Yeah.
Amazing. And so you did in 2017. You already said you met Luca at your previous job. How did you meet your third co-founder, Florian?
Yeah, actually, interesting. Like, so with Luca, so just a very, very good relation. I think we always had like very similar ideas, mm-hmm, but we also had been quite complementary, I think, in the way how we work together. So when we were able to get initial funding, well, before we founded the company, or like the legal company, and then was basically just two trading guys, but we didn't know we wanted to build like a digital company, like services for the renewable energy industry. So kind of the whole software engineering that was lacking. And then I went on holidays with a friend of mine, and then he said, yeah, I actually know someone that is a software entrepreneur, has his own company, but he would like to change a bit. And, mm-hmm, and then so basically we just met him twice, Florian, yeah, and it was kind of immediate match. And then he was also convinced after these two meetings. And then, yeah, basically it was the start of Pexapark.
I love this, the immediate match. Can you describe a bit more how that felt? You know, were you just all so energetic and you just couldn't stop talking about the business that you wanted to build together?
Yeah, it's like kind of the business, but it's also like the personal relationship. Right. It's just like, yeah, it was so easy to match. And then sometimes, yeah, you just find people that, yeah, I think you immediately makes click. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think then we just didn't know, hey, actually, that must be it. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. And what role does risk and portfolio management play in our transition, hopefully, towards net zero? Can you elaborate a bit more about the big picture?
Yeah. So maybe one step back, so like for renewable energy has been, as we just discussed before, so had been mostly supported by governmental subsidies. So, mm-hmm, kind of since technology at that time, I think, was still not competitive with the market price for electricity. No. So kind of you had like feed-in tariffs, you had like tax relief for investments. And I think the electricity market was not important. So even though like... investors invest into renewable energy assets, that basically did not participate in the electricity market. It was like a financial investment. Mm-hmm. And now with kind of these subsidies phasing out, since obviously taxpayers would not like to pay for technology that is competitive with the market, so kind of like these subsidy schemes have become like market-based or had been phasing out in some markets. Mm-hmm. And so kind of like investors into renewable energy are now exposed basically to the electricity market. And that market is very volatile. So maybe if you think back like just to last winter, where we had like gas shortage in Europe, mm-hmm, so power prices were just skyrocketing, and just in general, just a very volatile commodity, electricity. Mm-hmm. And so kind of to really succeed, I think like the risk management, the understanding what drives kind of the electricity price, that just becomes very important, since ultimately like the value of like the investment, if you invest into a wind farm or solar asset, mm-hmm, depends obviously to a great extent on the commodity that this wind farm is producing, that's electricity. And yeah, that's kind of like just gaining more understanding of that part of the market. So kind of in that sense, portfolio management, energy risk management becomes a key success factor. So really the understanding of how to manage and monetize kind of that investment over time.
Exactly. And that's where you come in. Before we dive into that, just out of curiosity, what makes the electricity market so volatile? Is it the fact that you have big problems storing large amounts of energy and sort of need to produce in demand, or why is it so volatile?
That's definitely, I think that's one important aspect. So kind of like the storage of energy. So it's obviously we, in Switzerland, we have some pump storage. There's also like a battery storage, but obviously that's super, super small. Mm-hmm. And then there's other means to kind of store electricity, but very limited. So it's basically like it's immediate production to the demand. And then like, I mean, that's part of the volatility, but that's short term. But then you also have geopolitics. You have like a different technology that produce electricity, nuclear, you have like coal, oil, and gas, and obviously like some are more geopolitics exposed, like nuclear, you need to buy kind of obviously the fuel somewhere, or oil as well. So kind of that's more than global, but you have also weather. If you have, water, if there's no rain, if you have hydro plants, and eventually it'll produce less. So it's all kind of, just a lot of interdependencies. So in order to really kind of understand the electricity market, you basically need to understand the full complex on the energy side.
It looks very, very complex. So I'm even more curious to see what you then offer. I think you have three different products that you offer today in this complex market. What are these three products?
Yeah, I think that we started a company with, I think, the investors in mind that invest into renewable energy, since we did see kind of, okay, these feed-in tariffs phase out. Mm-hmm. And obviously they would still want to invest into renewable energy. Mm-hmm. And then we just thought like, hey, I think our mission is really to help accelerate these investments and then providing capabilities to these investors, which then again is like, I think then three business lines evolved. So one is, basically this portfolio and risk management capabilities. So kind of for investors to understand kind of what is the way to monetize on the electricity side and their assets, how to construct portfolios in the best ways. So it's a lot of quantitative capabilities that we provide. Yeah. And then we had the second business line is basically price transparency. So it's mostly long-term investments. So kind of the price visibility on the commodity is very low. Yeah. And mostly like if you think about like a wind farm or solar panel. So obviously the production depends on mostly the weather and the location as well, obviously where the weather occurs. And then like each asset produces slightly different profiles or times. So it's kind of, it's not so simple to evaluate what's actually like a fair price in the market. Mm-hmm. And so what we provide then is this price transparency across now 19 markets, where basically like we just facilitate like this transparency, I believe is very important if you want to buy an asset, develop an asset, or if you want to sell energy, that all the market participants are able to agree plus minus on a price. So it makes it so much easier than basically if people don't don't understand or don't agree like on a price, or it's not so easy to agree on a price, makes it very inefficient. Yeah. Yeah, and the third then is like we provide execution services to actually enter PPA or a trade or sell energy and help basically execute strategies for market players in the market.
Maybe for the sake of the listeners, quickly explain what a PPA is. I'm sure many have never heard that term before.
No, sympathy for that. So I think when we started, it was like the Professional Photographer Association, if you looked on on Google. But I think in our industry, basically, it's a power purchase agreement. Yep. And it's basically just simple terms. It's a contract between a buyer and a seller where you agree on volume and price. Mm-hmm. And I think for renewable energy, it has just evolved the term into being like an important contract when kind of the asset is being built. So it's like the initial hedging contract, which basically covers the financing period. So like you can imagine like these assets, obviously like there's some investments by the investors investing to assets, but there's also like a big part is covered by lenders, banks that finance assets. And obviously they would like to get some security that kind of the money they invest, they will get back again.
Of course.
And like the PPA, this power purchase agreement, is basically like a hedging contract where kind of they get cash flow security. Yeah. So it's a very important element to finance and build an asset.
I'm sure that startup founders, they know the SPA, the share purchase agreement. So PPA, just the same, but for power.
Exactly.
And why are PPAs so popular for the solar part?
Yeah, I think like in China, it's like just how do you sell energy? So I wouldn't say PPAs are more popular for solar than for other assets. It's just that obviously solar investments, they have become popular since they have become very cost efficient. Mm-hmm. So like if you look at kind of the investment which is required to build a solar asset and like the marginal production cost and to produce energy, I think there has been obviously solar become one of the cheapest alternatives. And also solar, like the permitting. So if you want to build an asset, you basically need to get like all the permits together.
Yeah.
And for solar assets, that's much easier. It's also no rotating parts, whereas for a wind asset, just that takes a lot of more efforts, political agreements. Yeah.
And you mentioned at the beginning that now the subsidies are sort of fading out, that the government is reducing or even stopping subsidies. Yeah. From the outside perspective, one could think, oh, that's bad for your business because that could be a boost in the whole renewable sector. But it's actually the opposite, right? This is good for your business.
Okay, like, I mean, where we are able to add or provide value to the market is basically for merchant risk or like for risk management. Mm-hmm. So basically, if you receive subsidies from a government, which is basically a fixed price for, I don't know, 15 years yeah. for whatever you produce, obviously, we cannot provide much value to the market. But when it comes like to managing these risks, the commodity, I think we are able to provide a very good value for players to navigate and to manage kind of these businesses. So for our business or for the clients, actually, like I think it's very important.
Absolutely. And who are actually your customers? What companies do you work with?
Yeah. I think like for the business, I would say it's like everyone that has like or is a stakeholder in the renewable energy market. And you could think about like on the value chain, we have developers that mm-hmm. kind of are scouting like the best site to build like a wind farm, yep. That get all the permits, get technical contracts in place. So kind of these are the developers. So they basically consume our market prices for them to understand, or even some, I think, go into more quantitative analytics to understand what's the value kind of the asset. Mm-hmm. Then we have investors, like these are like, I don't know, infrastructure funds, larger infrastructure funds or independent power producers that basically just invest into the assets. So it's like they basically consume also like prices, but also like the software that we produce, or they consume transaction services. And then we have also like off-takers or the companies that buy energy. So that can be like utilities, can be traders, oil majors. I think they have become bigger players in the renewable energy market. Mm-hmm. We have also corporates, I think, driven by ESG. So like this requirement to really do something towards like climate as well. So kind of they're buying renewable energy from the source. And we also have like clients that are like equipment manufacturers, like producing turbines, since obviously the value of that equipment without subsidies depends heavily also on what the production of that asset can achieve in the market. So it's really kind of a wide span of clients, mm-hmm. but like everyone somehow has a tie obviously into the renewable energy market.
And with this, you know, wide span of clients, but also the three different solutions that you offer, that's quite a stretch as a company, right? Because yes. It sort of feels like all the products, the solution you offer, they also sort of need a bit of a different go-to-market strategy or different sales process. How do you handle that as a company? That sounds even more complex than it already is on its own.
That's a very good point and spot on. So like, obviously when we founded the company, so like we basically found the company as a software company, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't just provide this portfolio risk management platform. Yeah. And then we had like clients reaching out to us, say, hey, can you not advise us? Which we then turned down, say, now we are a software company, we don't do advisory. But then after some while, we basically just picked up on that. And then I think then the pricing side, that just became like apparent that kind of the market has no transparency on this price. So we thought it's kind of great to provide this service. So, but like we just basically built like or had different ideas and mm-hmm. maybe luckily or unluckily, like all of or most of them, they worked out kind of to build like business. And then we basically, just initially wanted to or had the idea kind of that we provide, everything out of one go. So kind of like mm-hmm. one go to market. So if people basically enter into this PPA contracts, they would need then a software to manage. And of course, to enter these contracts, you need prices. Yeah. So it's basically all one go-to-market move, only to realize over time that actually factually it's like three different go-to-markets at least. Even though like the clients or the companies are in many cases the same, but like also the users are different. I think the budgets are different. The use cases are different. And yeah, I think that just posed posing obviously a challenge to organize. But I think over time, you're also getting smarter and better at it and kind of like looking now at the business as three business lines. Mm-hmm. And basically, whereas initially we looked at first synergies and then the business lines, we now basically inverted that to now look at first the business lines and then the synergies. But it's a challenge. Yeah.
It sounds like you're almost combining three different startups under one roof, potentially.
Yeah, maybe. You can't say that. But I would say like there's a lot of synergies like between these markets. And I think also most of our clients, they're looking for one-stop solution as well. So I think we are able to benefit, especially at the stage where the market is as well, the maturity of the market. Yeah. But ultimately, it's true. So kind of like that could also develop into three standalone businesses.
And I want to see how you actually got there. You said you started with software. I think that's the very logical thing to do, right? It's scalable. It's what investors love. It drives your company valuation if you have recurring revenue. So then from software, how did the other business lines sort of emerge? And how did you sort of pivot a bit to the three that you have today? Because that is quite a shift, right?
No, exactly. Obviously, as I said before, so kind of we had the idea to build like this platform to manage. And then I think clients were notching whether we cannot support. And I think the realization very much is kind of like the market has been so young, like for many investors, they never had touch points with the electricity market, energy trading market. So basically it also like the element of education, of like providing capability. So it's not just kind of, here is the software, go, since you also kind of need to build up an understanding of the market capabilities, organizational processes, also change management. And so we also came to that realization, actually, that kind of the market also needs additional services, not just software at the point in time. So eventually that will change, I think, if the market matures. We also started, we had like this, we call it PPA Academy, initially, where we just said, hey, we spent like 14 plus years in energy trading. Why not? And we basically collect a lot of interesting insights over at that time for renewable energy market. We just thought like, hey, let's share it. Mm-hmm. So we built like a curriculum and then just put it on the homepage. And then basically like there was some interest for that. And then we thought, maybe after 2-3 academies, that's it. Yeah. The market is saturated. Only to realize now we had 1.5 to 2,000 participants, I guess, over time. So this year's even has been the year with the most participants. So really still growing. And I think that's really a pointer to the industry as well. Mm-hmm. I guess that next to software and like the capabilities that we provide, it's also kind of generally like the leveling up kind of everyone in the market. But I think that's also important for the energy transition. So I think that that everyone has similar understanding. So business is so much easier, obviously, if you are able to do this together. And I think we have to do this all together. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I love what you described as basically the customer need that led you to do the pivot. Yeah. But still, as a founder, I imagine it wasn't that easy. You saw the customer need there, but you also had this big vision, of having everything in one, the software focus, to make that shift and say, okay, I see the customer demand, but it's not originally what we wanted to do. Was that an easy decision because of the customer demand, or was it also challenging for you as a founding team to sort of pivot away a bit?
I think to realize the pivot, maybe that's like the hard thing, kind of like at the point where you say, okay, it's kind of the market wants maybe slightly something different, or like kind of like the initial idea doesn't get like all the traction which you imagine. Mm-hmm. And so kind of, but we had always been very open to kind of change and just adapting. I think we had, basically just sitting together with clients. And the spirit that we also on the founding team that we had, like kind of just embracing basically change and then see what we can do. And I think that's also where we get the energy from.
And you also had some change happening in your team. You basically doubled your headcount in 2022. I think today, we're recording this in November 23, you are around 100 employees. That is a steep growth for you as a company. So how did you sort of keep up with the organizational changes that come with it, but also with the culture that you want to have in the company?
No, it's true. Like, we basically added a lot of team colleagues in 2022. And I think the year was pointing to very steep growth, and then also which we initially had, and then came, I think, a bit of the energy crisis, where like kind of the markets really got crazy, volatilities, very high prices, and then basically I think that the market needed more time to adapt then. And so I think the challenge is really, I would say, like, bringing everyone up to speed. And obviously, like, initially you think it's quite easy, like you have the structure with the rounds, but then of course, like, the organization also is adapting, then you learn more about the business, and then kind of continuously the organization is evolving, and then you just have more relationships which need to work together. And also, like, I think during the pandemic, so we started to hire basically people also remote. So initially we just had like Lviv, we had Zurich, we had like London. And then we started to say, okay, since we are all anyway sitting at home, we should spread out. And basically now we have people spread across 10, 15 markets. Nice. Which obviously is fantastic, like from the cultural backgrounds, very enriching. On the other hand side, it's also kind of, it's also challenging, kind of like you just cannot sit in the same room so easily. Yeah. It's mostly online, which obviously works very well, but there's also limitations to that. So it's, I think continuously evolving, working on it.
What do you do then, you know, when you have people in all these countries? Do you organize regular get-togethers with the whole team somewhere for like an offsite? Or how do we ensure that you purposefully, shape and build the culture?
Yeah, so we have like two important events here. So like we have the Christmas party.
Coming up soon then.
Absolutely, exactly. And we have the summer party. And basically we just fly everyone in to a place where we go. Like the Christmas party, now we go to Swiss Mountains 2 days and just basically fly everyone in and have 2 days of fun together and really kind of enjoy the time we have together. So it's then less about like business and budgeting and so, but it's very much about like just being together, also celebrating the achievements we have been doing and just bonding together. I think that's very important. And we also encourage obviously like kind of people to meet each other, travel, and obviously like the online abilities also got much better with pandemic, I guess. And we have like Slack and just a lot of like channels that we try to utilize to somehow really stick together.
When you doubled your headcount, that's usually when a company's organizational structure, communication structure sort of breaks down a bit and needs to be reshaped or reinvented. What changed? What were some of the biggest changes when you really doubled the headcount? You know, did you have to introduce a different layer of management, or did you have to introduce different formats to communicate with everyone? What sort of were the biggest changes in that doubling of the headcount?
I think we didn't really like change the communication. So kind of we still basically use similar channels. Like we also have like, I don't know, all hands meetings. We have like Slack channel where basically just everyone is posting cool stuff. I think obviously the organization, so what we did like just in this summer, so kind of we organized now into business lines. So kind of just creating a bit more focus, where before it was like just holistically managing or trying to manage the company more from the the foundation of being one team. It's basically now kind of three business lines. So I think that really helps create focus. Obviously, like, each organization has its deficiencies, I believe. So no matter how you organize it, I think the having the awareness of like where kind of the weaknesses are, that's important. And And then obviously continuously evolve. I guess that will never stop.
So but, it sounds like the scaling up, the doubling of the headcount, it wasn't that big of a challenge for you.
No, I wouldn't say that. It's really like, the, I mean, to double the, I think it wasn't, I mean, was a huge team effort. And yeah. I think we're just so lucky to have like such a fantastic team with PEX Park. I think the, everyone's doing such a great job. But like, I think that, I mean, to really get like an enthusiastic team together, I think that was obviously also challenging, but that was maybe not the most challenging. Then it's really kind of, okay, who is doing what? Like accountabilities. I think that really takes time. And I think that's the hard thing. To do. I just did see in the back of me on the recording studio, there's the book of hard things.
Exactly. Well, you agree with what's written in that book?
No, absolutely. Like on paper, it all sounds so easy. Yeah. But it's, I mean, for everyone, it's like the small steps, baby steps to get them in good shape. And I think just takes effort.
And I feel I've never been doubling from like 50 to 100 employees, but whenever you add more people to an organization, it doesn't just get linearly complex, but exponentially, because they also all have relationships with each other. And I think that's what makes it especially challenging when you grow in terms of headcount.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. Yeah. Well, it also makes it very interesting, I would say.
Of course.
So, I mean, I love to work together with people, and like, I think all the different backgrounds, the new ideas, kind of like the people bring in, I think that. Yeah, I think that's extremely valuable in driving the company ahead.
There's one last challenge I want to talk about. You recently raised 20 million euros of fresh capital. How challenging is the fundraising for you? I mean, you have a nice track record, you have a great team, you're active in a complex market and sort of have proven yourself. But despite all of that, it can be challenging, especially in these times, to raise fresh capital.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's, I agree. So it's kind of like the timing, like with the market, is maybe not ideal or hasn't been ideal to raise money, since kind of like you had like the whole global situation with more uncertainty. You have like conflicts. You have like kind of the markets have compressed with increasing interest rates. So we have a lot of different factors, which I think. I think made investors a bit more cautious to invest if we compare like to 2 years ago. On the other hand side, I would say like the industry that we are in, on like the topic with energy transition, sustainability, supporting kind of climate change, so that so we got a lot of interest. But like fundraise, ultimately it's like fundraise, so kind of like you need to be able to, share the same ambitions and future, and also kind of it's not kind of a short-term transaction, so it's like it's basically long-term relationship, so it's not just like I go out to the market in 2 months, like I get the funds together from new parties, but basically it's like cultivating also like good relationships in the market, and continuously like being in exchange the market.
And how were you able to convince the investors? Was it mainly a growth play where you say, hey, we grew tremendously, so now we need more money to grow even more? Or what was sort of the storyline for raising the funds?
Yeah, I think maybe multiple elements. So it's like, one is definitely like the markets, kind of like, I think there are some clever companies with a crystal ball, like Goldman Sachs, McKinsey, which say kind of, okay, the market eventually will multiply or like even... increase by a factor of 10x over the next decades for renewable energy. And then, of course, some capabilities are needed to build that up. So kind of, generally like a growth potential ahead, but then obviously it's always a question, are we part of that growth or not?
Of course.
And then I guess then the business as such, the business model, like the track records, I think the team, are we all like having the same conviction that kind of we are able to succeed, like going ahead?
I think you mentioned a very important point. You cannot directly influence it, but you can choose by the playing field that you're becoming or that you are active in. It's the growth of the market. So in your case, you know, I always try to understand, okay, if the market is growing fast or big times, is it tenfold over the next decade or so? That's huge. And if you're part of that, that means ideally you grow in a similar speed, right? So how important was that from a strategic perspective? Did you really make that a conscious decision and you saw, oh, this is right, the market that you want to go in because you knew the market from before? Or what importance does the market growth play for being an entrepreneur, basically?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. So like it's, I think in our case, we just, I mean, we spend a lot of time in trading. So it's basically just right, what we did know. So it's like kind of maybe a lucky coincidence that basically we had been able to gain like, insights into the market and also kind of, just we had been closing like PPAs 15 years ago already, where basically the market just the last 5 years had become like a buzzword and the hot topic. So we had a bit of like, I've been able to gain additional insights, being a step ahead eventually at that time. So I would say, obviously, for building a company, I believe like the growth in the market makes it definitely easier. Mm-hmm. On the other hand side, it's, I think it poses the same challenge. I mean, are you able to offer something valuable to this growing market? So we don't provide equipment to build an asset or... So I think there's a lot of great opportunities in the market and we just cover like a small part of what is relevant to tie together the market.
And just one additional last question that comes to mind. With the growth, you also have probably customers that might not be fully aligned with a mission of sustainability, at least from the outside. You know, if you work with like big polluters or something to further grow, that can be a challenge. How do you make that sort of call? It's a fine balance, I imagine, to strike, right? You want to help to manage the energy transition to really get to net zero. At the same time, companies that don't really contribute to that, more of the opposite, could be your customers. Is that sort of a tough trade-off that you have to make sometimes?
No, I wouldn't say like kind of, I wouldn't say so. So it's kind of like every bit helps, I think, on the energy transition. So I think there's a... Yeah, I think also like you have basically oil majors shifting kind of like capital allocation to renewable energy. I think where eventually like initially was more kind of like looking into spicing up kind of their marketing reach. Now I think it's really kind of a solid business. And I think I think it also just takes time. So kind of we are supportive of basically the entire transition.
I think being a solid business, that's probably a key part. If renewable energy is a solid business, it attracts more volume and more investment. And I think ultimately, that's probably the push that it needs to break through even further.
Yeah. I see the same. So like, it's kind of like, I think for obviously investments into the market, it's about like confidence in the market. So for the money that has been allocated into kind of these investments, will there be like... No surprises going ahead in the future, or limited surprises. And I think everyone that can provide like an additional piece of confidence. And I think that's very helpful. Yeah. So to really create like, okay, renewable energy, that's kind of great to invest and very attractive. So I think there's a lot of elements that need to work together.
Absolutely. And if you look a bit into the future, you are now active in 19 markets. You just got the 20 million euros of fresh capital. What are some of the next milestones that you want to tackle?
Yeah, definitely further building the business, I think, here in Europe. So kind of there's still a lot of things that that we are able to build make our business kind of reaching even more customers to support them in their business. But then it's also like ambition to become active outside of Europe. So we already have for the portfolio risk management platform, we have some assets in the US. So on the advisory side, we provided some support for customers in Asia or projects in Asia. Yeah. So I think it's baby steps, but now I think with the funding in the back, so there's ambitions to just explore additional markets outside of Europe as well.
A very exciting future ahead of you. And I feel you're just getting started. There's so much more to do and to work on.
Yeah, I feel the same. Yeah. So it's obviously like there's a history now. So I would say like after 6 years, we have become a teenager, not just like not grown up yet, but not like a fresh startup either. Yeah. So obviously like still as a teenager, I think there's a lot of growth opportunities ahead of us, also like in line with the markets, but there's already some heritage and some also challenges that some teenagers might have. So that's the same for us. So I think just makes it also very interesting, I guess, the day-to-day job. So it's never boring.
Fantastic. And to wrap up the conversation today, Michael, I also prepared some rapid-fire questions.
Okay.
So I want to give you a short question or different options to choose from, and you have to answer in one sentence.
Okay.
You ready?
I'll try.
What's your biggest environmental sin?
Oh, many. Maybe one is like, I still don't have an electric car. It's on top of my list, but my car just stands in the garage and maybe I use it once a week.
Fair. Do you ever get bogged down by climate grief?
You know what? No, actually not. Like, it's kind of, maybe this circle of influence, but like, mm-hmm. It's kind of like the circle of control is what I can really control. That's basically just my thoughts, I would say.
Right.
Circle of influence, that is what I can influence. Like, also, as we discuss, maybe we get to new ideas. Okay. And then there's this circle of concern, which I cannot influence, but basically I could get like the grief or like kind of.
Of course.
And so I try to really focus on, yeah, the circle of influence. Yeah. I think, so I can't do anything for obviously the other part.
Are you more of a morning person or more of a night owl?
More a night owl. So
great.
I stay up late night.
What's the most useful piece of advice that you've ever gotten?
Oh, I got a lot of useful advice and still getting a lot of useful advice. Maybe the one like that really sticks is like the revolving door concept for decision making, or the 1-2-door principle, where basically revolving door says like, for most of the decision we take, actually, if you don't like the room that you entered, you can also leave again. So, yeah. So that I think it's true for most of the things we design. I think if you have that in concept, then most of the decision, like the hurdle to take a decision, just becomes lower. It's not forever. Obviously, there's some decisions which have a wider influence. And then I think that maybe it's very good to think very, very, very hard about like whether you want to do that or not.
Absolutely. And 6 years in, has entrepreneurship been worth it for you?
Yeah, I would say it's like very rewarding for like kind of all the great people that I am honored to work with. Mm-hmm. Learning every day a lot of new things, also like in areas where I never worked in. So kind of like all the various aspects of building company. But of course, it's also like hard. It's a lot of effort to put in, a lot of time. So kind of maybe from the outside, sometimes it looks a bit romantic or like just building a startup. Obviously, it sounds very cool, but it's really hard efforts by everyone,
of course,
that's working in the company. But I think it's very rewarding, so a lot of learning. Yeah.
So no regrets that you left your amazing job and started your own company?
No, I wouldn't say so. But obviously, that was also a great time, but very much enjoy.
Fantastic. Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show. Lots of success with the next milestones. It's a really exciting time ahead of you. And thank you again for your inputs and stories that you share with us.
Thank you so much, Sylvain, for having me. Yeah, great pleasure. And thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, you can support us by rating our show on Apple Podcasts. This way, we can reach an ever-growing number of aspiring entrepreneurs.